You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
The Solis' first throw downfield, got Banks, in stride, Sweetie B, touchdown. Second consecutive week, they open with a touchdown to Banks on the first possession. But it looked like he lined up behind the putter. Trying to do it here for the end zone touchdown, Luke Tasker. June Jones' team 4-2 under his direction. A huge upset here tonight at Investors Group Field.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, we have a very packed show this week, but unfortunately, before we get into any of the Ticat stuff, we do have to start the show on a little bit of a somber note. You and I lost a pretty good friend of the show this week, in Brian Broom. He passed away on Thursday, and I'm not going to lie to you, man, this one hit me really, really hard. I don't think you can say, like, in the traditional sense, Brian wasn't what you would call a friend, but we live in this era of social media, and personally, I have no problems calling Brian a friend. He was a guy I never had the privilege of meeting, but he was always there with a kind word, or you could have a fun chat with him about the Ticats. And knowing that I won't ever get a message from him again, it makes me really, really upset. This was a tough pill to swallow when I got the news on Thursday.
Yeah, it was a big time shocker. I mean, I didn't know if he was sick or what the situation was, but to just hear that he passed away so abruptly took me by surprise as well. I never met him either, but from what I gathered through Twitter, he seemed like a great guy who cared a lot about the Ticats and was a very loyal listener to this show. So he will be deeply missed by everyone who knew him and people who didn't know him on Twitter as well.
Yeah, there was a big thing during the Ticats game this week, started by some fans, myself included. We decided we would eat a butter tart, which, full disclosure, I think is one of the most disgusting foods there possibly is, in memory of Brian, because Brian was a big fan of them. Yeah, I never got the chance to meet up with him, and he was always, him and I would always talk back and forth, like, hey, next time you come up to Hamilton, we'll meet up, we'll have a drink, we'll share a laugh, we'll have a conversation. And every time, he didn't come up a lot in the years that I was interacting with him, but every time it would happen, for one reason or another, it wouldn't work out. Our schedules wouldn't align, and it just wouldn't let us do it. And we always said, next time, man, next time. And there's not going to be a next time. And I will probably forever regret not taking the time out of my day to go meet with him, because I don't know if people know this or not, but he was very kind to me over the years in a lot of ways. He privately credited me with reigniting his passion for the Ticats, which I find incredibly insane. When you look at it, when you think about, like, this was a guy who was constantly talking about the team. He loved the team, but he lived in Florida. He didn't fall out of love with the team, but you live down in the States, it's a lot harder to get your CFL fix. And when I started blogging all those years ago, he said that coming across that was the thing that sort of got him, like, really back into it. And that is such a tremendous honor for a guy who became such a great fan ambassador for this league. And the big thing for you and I is he was instrumental in us getting Jeff Reinbold on as a guest. He privately messaged me, and obviously I think from the last few days, everyone knows him and Jeff were very close. He was the one that kind of hooked us up all together, and he didn't have to do that. He never wanted credit for it, but if he doesn't vouch for us with Jeff, we never get him on that show, and we got that. And then you and I got this tremendous experience of chatting for like 45 minutes with Jeff Reinbold about his life in football, and it was just awesome. And Brian did not have to do that. He There's no reason for him to give us a helping hand. That was in the very early day. I think we were, what, a year or so into doing the show. He didn't have to do that, and he went out of his way, and that's something that I could never repay, and it's something I'll never forget.
Yeah, he was pushing that for a while to get Jeff on the show with us. And
almost since day one, almost since when we launched the show, he's like, get Jeff on the show. And
right.
And he was the guy that set it all up.
Yeah, and I will be always grateful for that, because one of the highlights for me doing the show with you was that interview. I mean, Jeff had so many great stories, and it was just a really fun time talking with the guy. So for Brian to really help us out to get him on the show was a great thing for him to do. And you're right, he didn't have to do it, but he put in the full effort to get Jeff on Podski Wee Wee.
Yeah, so just to cap this off, I want to thank Brian for all he did for me, for us, and just say that I will miss him tremendously. And the world is now a lesser place without him in it. And I think this is going to be one that takes a while to get over, Mike. But we do have a show to do. We do have some football to talk about, and there's really no easy way to go from talking about something so tragic and so real world, and then into talking about football. But I guess we'll just talk about the game, and we'll do what we always do, and we'll kind of make fun of ourselves to start here. I have no idea now, Mike, why anyone listens to us, because it is very clear after what happened in Winnipeg on Friday that you and I have no idea what we are talking about. We sat here last week and basically said the Ticats had no chance of winning this game, and now we're sitting here talking about a 30-13 Ticats win where they dominated the Bombers from pretty much start to finish.
Yeah, and in our defense, I mean, who could really see this coming? Winnipeg has been the second best team in the league in my eyes for pretty much the whole season. They've been a great team, so this one was a very hard win to predict. I'm gonna go with the same prediction this week, and I hope that I am wrong again.
Yeah, I think what we have to take from this one is something that we didn't expect to be saying when this team was 0-8. This Ticats team is pretty good.
They are pretty good. I mean, they went into Winnipeg, a road game, and they kicked the Bombers' butt. I must say, they dominated the play on offense and defense. And who would have thought for Labor Day that this team would be performing at a high level? It's just unfathomable back then.
4-2 since Labor Day. If this team was 4-2 to start the season, we're talking one of the best teams in the CFL. But they did start 0-8, so that does lead to this team being 4-10 and still fighting very much for their playoff lives. Obviously, this team would be in a lot better position if the BC Lions could hold on to a 19-point lead, but this team would also be in a better position if they didn't start the season 0-8. So they have no one to blame for their position right now but themselves. However, this is a good football team, and this is a team that I think, even if they don't make the playoffs, and there's still a lot left to do to get this team into the playoffs, they have to win a lot of football games in these last 4 weeks. I think we can look back and say, looking on this, how this team performed, and then looking into next season, it doesn't look like this is going to be a massive rebuild.
No, it looks like a retooling of sorts. Maybe bring some guys in, let's some guys go, and be right back on, not on top, but be right back in the conversation next year. Because you look at, you know, the worry areas that we had in the offseason, the offensive line is playing incredible right now. The secondary is playing incredible right now. The kicking was great until something happened, but we'll get into that later. But overall, this team is really, really talented and performing on the field. So it's, you know, it makes you more interested in the season when your team is doing well. So hopefully down the stretch, we can keep that interest.
So, Mike, let's stop talking about next year. We got a podcast at the end of the year where we can talk about where this team's going next year. Let's get back to talking about this game. Let's go with the offense. Mike, what do you got to talk about? I know you got a ton. Let's start. Where do you want to go?
I want to start with Jeremiah Mazzoli. You know, you look at his stats for this game, and it is night and day compared to the stats in previous games. Not that he wasn't playing well before in the previous games, but let me just list off some of these numbers. He was 27 of 33, 81.8% completion percentage, which is you know, at least 20% above what he was doing in the previous games. 338 yards passing and 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. This guy was on a roll this game. We were talking about it before the show. The last time we saw Jeremiah Mazzoli perform this well was the game against Edmonton last year when he completed a ridiculous number of passes for a record. So I can't say enough about Jeremiah Mazzoli in this game. He looks like a starting quarterback.
He does. He looks like he could legitimately be the guy that takes this team into the future. And it's funny, I was watching the Edmonton Eskimos Montreal game, and I was talking to my brother about this because it's what we do. And Mazzoli, not in style necessarily, but in the way sort of he has these big ups and big downs, reminds me a lot of Kevin Glenn in the fact that you're going to get these great performances and you're going to get some shoddy ones. But at the end of the season, it'll all even out. Like, Mazzoli's a guy, I think if you start him, you'd win about 8 to 10 games every year. But 8 to 10 games is playoffs. That will make the playoffs. That will win divisions, especially in the East Division. So I didn't think I'd say this when he was first put in, and I was surprised when you said it a couple weeks ago, but I think Jeremiah Mazzoli could be the quarterback of the future, the present, for this Hamilton Tiger-Cats team.
Yeah, you just get that feeling when you watch the offense. I know I get it now. Is I have confidence that this team's going to move the ball. This team is going to score points with Mazzoli behind center, and I did not have that at the start of the season, not even close. So there's a serious balance going on in this offense right now. You look at the passing, how many attempts they had, 33 attempts passing, and then you look at the running in this game. They had 29 attempts, I believe, 20 carries from Alex Green, 8 from Mazzoli, and 1 from Sean Erlington. Alex Green, another great game, you know, almost 100 yards. He had a touchdown, 4.8 yard average. You know, it was sad to see Gable go, but this guy is a player too.
Yeah, seeing him play this well, 20 carries for 97 yards, getting the ball 20 times is – we saw it last week with Gable where he had 20-plus touches, and we didn't think this would happen. But the balance this offense has, 33 total pass attempts to 29 runs, pretty much a 50-50 balance, which – you're not going to see every week. This team had a big lead. They were trying to salt away. They were running the ball instead of throwing it. But at the same time, Green kind of showed that BC game wasn't a fluke. He didn't have as big a game in this one as he did against the Lions a couple of weeks ago. But 97 yards rushing to go with 140, like, this is a guy that he's shown he can play in this league.
Mm-hmm. And the Tigers come into games now, and the defenses that they play are going to have to worry about Alex Green running the ball. They're going to have to worry about Jeremiah Mazzoli running the ball. They're going to have to worry about Mazzoli passing the ball. So there's a lot of threats going on in this offense right now that defenses have to worry about. And that's a great thing to have.
Well, the offense is now multidimensional. They're not predictable. Back when it was Zach Caleros back there. And look, I want to make it clear. We're not blaming Zach Caleros for this at all. This, to me, was a scheme thing. This was Austin and Potasik to a much lesser extent than Austin. That was the offense they wanted to run. This is the offense June Jones wants to run. I still believe in my heart of hearts that Zach Caleros could be successful in this offense. But Jeremiah Mazzoli is successful in this offense. And part of that is balance in running the football. And the offensive line, which you talked about a little bit earlier, how they've grown into being a pretty formidable unit, when they get a chance to fire off the ball and hit, it gets them into the game. Some of the holes that Green had were massive. When he had that big run late in the game, I believe it was a 25 or so yard run, the hole he ran through was gigantic. And when you get guy, and then there was a one run play where Ryan Bomben pulled and absolutely flattened, I think it was Chris Randall. Like, when the offensive line is getting into the game and they're having fun and they're getting to hit, that opens everything up. That makes everything better. Their pass protection was great. Like, this is a total team effort where everything is sort of clicking and piling on to one another. And it's been a lot of fun to watch these last few weeks.
And that was happening in the game before as well. I remember the hole that Gable ran through on that 40-plus yard run, and it was humongous. So, you know, we're wrong a lot. We're wrong a lot. But what have we been saying since this podcast started? Please run the ball more. Guess what? We're seeing it now, and we're seeing the results that can come from it. And it's a huge difference from the offense we saw in the first 8 or 9 games.
look at all the changes the team's made to the offense too. Brandon Banks, I'm sure he's someone you want to talk about. Shamad Chambers, probably another guy you want to talk about. Andy Fantu's coming back, starting to get a little more into it. Luke Tasker's not being used as much as he used to be, but he still made some big plays in this game. Jalen Saunders, like this receiving core that everyone thinks they're a little short. They're high on speed, they're low on height, but they're making plays, and there were a lot of plays being made by all these guys in this game.
Yep, you just go through the numbers. I mean, Brandon Banks led the team. He had that huge play in the first drive of the game for the Ticats, I believe that touchdown pass for 60 yards. He's just making plays. He's showing that he's a good receiver right now. Jalen Saunders is really coming into his own. He almost had 100 yards too. Shamad Chambers, 7 catches, 81 yards. I mean, I didn't see this coming from Chambers, but he looks like a rejuvenated player. Maybe he's just getting the chance. Maybe this team is actually throwing him the ball, and maybe that's why he's being productive. Maybe he wasn't getting thrown the ball in Saskatchewan or Edmonton before. So I've been really impressed with what he's been able to do since he's came onto this team. And you mentioned Fantu, 3 catches for 32 yards, but some of those catches were huge. The one play, Mazzoli was scrambling out of the pocket. He was running towards the sideline, running out of time to throw the ball, kind of pointed in a direction. And Fantu knows what to do with all that experience with the scramble rule. He came back to the ball, caught the ball, stepped out of bounds at the 1 yard line. And that's just a veteran move from a savvy player.
Yeah, Shamad Chambers is a guy that I want to highlight because it was on the big drive, the one that kind of salted this game away, the 100-yard, 14-play, like 8-minute drive that this team had. On second down and long, Shamad Chambers made a catch, and he fought for extra yards to get it to a manageable third and less than a yard. He fought to get there. He tried to get the first down, obviously, but he did enough, put in enough effort on that play to get this team to within a manageable where, as you like to say, you just got to plop it. And that's what they did. They plopped it. They kept the drive going. They scored a touchdown in there that basically ended the game. And that's the type of stuff you're starting to see from this team and from a guy like Chambers, who maybe you're right. Maybe his numbers were down because he wasn't being utilized. You look at it here. I don't believe he had a catch in the last game against the Argos, but against the Lions in his first game with the Ticats, I think he had 7 catches in that one too. When he gets involved in the game, he's making game-changing, game-altering, or just big plays in general. And like he had the long bomb late in the game, which was a curious call, but when it works, it works. And you kind of forget about the fact that it was like second and 2 and they decided to go for a deep pass, but he caught like a 41-yard bomb on that to sort of set them up into range. So there's just there's a lot of stuff going on with this offense right now since June Jones took over, and each week it seems like they're getting better and better.
Yeah, and I like how near the end zone they're running that out pattern with Luke Tasker. I think, you know, Banks does a little bit of, knocks the defender, but it's not illegal, or he does it so well that it doesn't look illegal. But that play is working, like, every time they did it. I think they did it on a touchdown pass, and then they did it the next play on the 2-point conversion. So, you know, they're figuring out ways to utilize all their weapons and punch it into the end zone.
I do want to talk about something that did bother me in this game about the offense. It's hard to get too critical because they won by 17 and they did play so well. But this team takes a lot of time count penalties. And there's they took a timeout really early in the game, which you can chalk that up to June Jones's lack of familiarity with the league. But there's just certain things where they shouldn't happen. You know what I mean? And these time count calls are just – they're too frequent, and it bogs down drives. One of the time count calls late, I believe, in the second quarter led to the Sergio Castillo field goal where he got hurt. And we'll talk about Castillo and his injury a little bit later. But if they don't take that penalty, maybe they score a touchdown. Castillo never comes on the field except for an extra point. And we're not talking about losing the potential East All-Star kicker to the year with a torn ACL if they don't take that penalty. And it's those are costly mistakes. And I know Winnipeg's a good team, and I say the Ticats need to play near perfect to beat these good teams. And I thought the Ticats did play a near perfect game against Winnipeg. But these types of mistakes, they're killers. They're absolute killers.
Yeah, that needs to be cleaned up. And, that can be fixed. I'm not sure who to blame on that, if it's Mazzoli or the head coach or whatever. But That can be fixed, and I believe that they will work on that to make sure it doesn't happen in the future.
So is there anything else offensively you'd like to talk about, or should we move on to the defense?
I just wanted to touch on the onside punt. I had a little flashback to the Reinbold days when he was special teams coordinator. That was beautiful, man. I mean, they planned that perfectly. Mazzoli looked like he was going to be in the shotgun. He took a little step back. Banks was onside, and if you're going to get someone to run down there, you're going to get the guy with the speed, and that's Speedy B. It was just a beautifully executed play, and I love to see that kind of stuff.
I like to see this team taking chances to win games. They had lost their kicker. We'll get to their bat who replaced Castillo in this game and give him a little bit of praise because I thought he played really well. But this quick kick, this quick punt with some onside players, like you said, Speedy B, you have the fastest guy. He's the fastest guy in the field by a mile, and he's out there. It just you. I watched it happen, and I'm thinking this is gonna work. And Brandon Banks gets down, and I thought for actually that someone was gonna pick it up, scoop and score. But Banks, instead of trying to pick up the ball, he located where it was and he wrapped it up. That was the smart play. And that's something else this team is doing that I think needs to be talked about, is they're making the smart play. They're not trying to win it all on one play. You see Mazzoli make more prudent, smart decisions. You're seeing guys not go for the big play if it's not there and take what's given to them. And that's what Banks did. Banks could have easily tried to pick that up and score a touchdown, but instead he was to himself, I'm gonna fall on this. We're gonna keep the ball. The offense is gonna keep humming. Like that's a heads up play by a veteran player that sometimes you don't always see. That to me is worthy of praise.
Absolutely. You're right. You don't have to score on every play, and he did the right thing by just dropping on it. You see too many times football players trying to pick up the ball on the run, and it doesn't turn out well. The ball gets kicked, or they drop it out of their hands, and it's bouncing around. So just fall on it, let the offense do its thing, and I believe they did do its thing. So yeah, very smart play by Banks, and a great play call, and great execution by this team.
All right, so let's move on to the defense. There's a lot of good to talk about here. I think the big thing is how this team did in the run game. This was the second straight week that this team played a guy who is in the running as a league or division all-star at running back, and they gave Andrew Harris, who is an MOP candidate, absolutely nothing in this. Five carries is all Harris had for 26 yards, and he did have 65 yards in the receiving game, but 44 of them came on that trick play the Bombers ran, where they looked like they were lining up to plop it, as you like to say, but instead
Yes.
snapped it through the legs. Darvin Adams hit him deep, and they ended up scoring a touchdown on that drive. But that was really all this defense gave up, and that was really all this defense gave up to Harris, who, to be fair, wasn't utilized as much in the run game as the Bombers started to get outscored by a lot. You're not running the football when you're down by two touchdowns. But other than that one big play, Andrew Harris, a legitimate, I must say this, a legitimate most outstanding player candidate, was a complete non-factor in this game.
Yeah, they really shut him down, and it's been great to see this defense really shut down one like a couple of the best running backs in the leagues the last 4 or 5 weeks. It's amazing, really. It really is compared to what this defense was in the first half of the season. And you look at them, they pretty much, Matt Nichols had good numbers, 14 for 18, 158 yards, touchdown, interception, but he was really a non-factor either. I know he went down and Dominic Davis came in, but when he was in there, the Ticats were still whooping, right? I mean, they were flying around there doing a great job on defense.
They beat the snot out of Matt Nichols. And look, you never want to see players get hurt. I want to make that clear. But the Ticats are starting to make a habit out of beating the absolute dog piss out of opposing quarterbacks. They knocked out Trevor Harris back in early September. They beat the crap out of Ricky Ray last week. And then this week, they kind of chased Matt Nichols from the game after beating him around a little bit. And I think if this game would have been a little bit closer, or if the sense was that if this game mattered a lot more to Winnipeg, because they're still in a race to catch Calgary, but they really are focusing on getting that number two seed and getting that home playoff game in the West semifinal. And if they were to lose Matt Nichols for any extended period of time, that might all go away. We know all too well what it's like to have your MOP candidate quarterback get hurt late in the season and completely kibosh your Grey Cup chances. So that's probably why they took him. But look, guys getting hurt sucks, but when they're clean legal hits, it's just a part of the game. And the Ticats have been taking these licks out on these quarterbacks in a clean legal way. And Matt Nichols was just the latest victim of some good hard hitting Ticats defense.
Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with getting to the quarterback and laying a couple really good hits on him. And did they ever get to the quarterback? You want to touch on the defensive line, because they were pretty spectacular.
Just all over the place. This line, Ted Laurent came back in this game, and that's a big boon to this team. He, not only is he a Canadian, but he's that stud in the middle that just keeps – just kind of makes everything – I don't even know what the word is, but the defense had five sacks this game. They had additional three pressures. Adrian Tracy – who, shout out to Adrian Tracy, because not only did this man change his Twitter avatar pic to Brian's for this game, after the game he had a two-sack performance, and he came out and he did it. He said those two sacks were for the two Ticats fans that died this past week. That is a class act from a genuine good human being. He's made a fan for life in me because of that. So to see him have that good game and then do that, like that's just awesome.
Yeah, it shows his character, that's for sure. Like, you know, he didn't have to do that, and he did, and I thought it was a great thing, and I thought he had a great game.
The defense as a whole had a great game, and like I said, they shut down Andrew Harris. They also pretty much shut down this passing offense of the Bombers. Once again, did not allow a 100-yard receiver for the team. You mentioned Matt Nichols' numbers. That were pretty good, but they – it wasn't like it was a dominating performance. Like you hear 14 for 18 and 158 yards and he only played a half. Okay, that's not bad, but this team made a ton of moves in the secondary, benching Emmanuel Davis, and they still managed to pretty much shut down this passing attack. Darvin Adams, who has been a stud all year, was the leading receiver with, I believe it's 94 yards is what he had in this game. And he made a lot of those catches, especially late in the first half. He made a few nice ones that set up the Bombers to try to score. And then, of course, the defense takes that away when Richard Leonard, who for me is the hands-down rookie of the year so far this season and should absolutely be in Ottawa for the player awards at the end of the season, gets another interception, his fourth of the year. And he's out there making plays. And you know, the secondary is they're playing strong. And one of the moves they made, and this is the thing I definitely want to touch on, they moved Abdul Kanne from halfback to Sam linebacker. And, Mike, I think I'm in love with this move. We know he can cover, and we know he likes to hit, so I think he's perfectly suited for this role. And I don't know if this is a permanent stay for him or if this was just we're going to make some changes and see what works here, but I think he fits the position like a glove.
He played the position very well in this game. You know, he had a QB sack and a forced fumble. And, you know, the stats don't always tell the story, because I'm sure he did a lot more to help this team than that. So, once again, another smart move by June Jones, it appears.
Seems like every move that man's making right now when it comes to on the field is paying off. And the last little thing I want to talk about when it comes to the defense is turnovers. I talked last week that if Winnipeg won the turnover battle, that they would win this game, and that the Ticats had to limit their turnovers and hopefully try to make a few of their own. And there we go. At the end of the game, Ticats won the turnover battle 2-1. You mentioned Kanne's forced fumble. Leonard had the INT. And to me, it wasn't just that they forced the turnovers. It was the timing of them. Both of these turnovers came when they on Winnipeg drives that were looking to get points on the board. I believe the Kanne fumble came with the Actually, I think both the interception and the fumble came when the Bombers were well within field goal range. And in a game that the Ticats dominated from start to finish, you don't look at these types of plays as being hugely important, but I still think they're key. They kept points off the board for the Bombers, and even like the Leonard interception, for example, didn't lead to any points for the Ticats. Basically, the interception happened, they kneeled it out 10.5. But it's a different ball game if they go in after the Bombers march down the field in like 50 seconds and kick a field goal. Instead, they went in off a turnover. The Ticats are all pumped. The Bombers are down. It kind of changes the momentum in the game.
Yeah, it's a good thing to go into the half without giving up those points, because you never know which way momentum's going to go. So, you know, those plays are the plays that we weren't making early on in the season, and it's phenomenal to watch.
Yeah, and I think that's a big thing too that we haven't really taken into account. This is a very young team. You look at that secondary, there are a lot of first and second year guys back there. There are some veterans and guys like Kane, guys like Courtney Steven, Emmanuel Davis when he plays, but Leonard's kind of a first year guy. I know Don Unamba's been around a little bit, but this is really his first chance to really sort of latch on to a starting role for in his career. And then there is oh my god, I'm drawing a blank on the name. I can't believe I'm doing this. And it's a name I can't entirely pronounce. This is not who I'm talking about, but Kariel Brooks, he moved from Sam to the secondary. Didn't really hear a ton about him, but that's a good thing. Like when you're not hearing guys' names, that's what you want. And then there was Odiasi, number 9. He was thrust into a starting role. And again, you watch this secondary with all these younger players. They're growing as the year goes on. You're not seeing coverage breakdowns. Look, the offense that they're playing against, they're going to make plays. That's going to happen. But you're just seeing some really solid play from the secondary, and that's sort of trickled down. The whole defense is playing well. This was the fifth of six games where they've allowed 20 or fewer points. They allowed 13 points this game. Could you imagine in July we were talking about, or in August, hey, the Ticats defense only allowed 13 points. We were glad that they held teams under 30, and now they're holding teams to 13. Like this is a major turnaround. I think June Jones deserves credit for it. Philip Lawley, I think, deserves credit for it. But the players also deserve a ton of credit turning this defense around. It's been awesome.
Absolutely. They could have given up. They could have thrown in the towel, and they didn't. They bought into this new system, and it's showing. And you mentioned Brooks. He led the team, or tied for the lead for defensive tackles in this game. Now, it's not always great when you're a guy in the secondary leads the team in tackles, but a pretty good debut for this guy.
But at the same time, it makes sense because they were up by so much, the Bombers had to throw, so your DBs are going to make a ton of tackles. And you're right, though. In most instances, you don't want to see your DBs with a ton of tackles, but that means that they're making tackles when throw passes were thrown their way, and that's a good thing. What's not a good thing, however, Mike, is the next thing we got to talk about, and that is Sergio Castillo. Man, it was tough seeing him lying on the ground and then getting carried off the field. It made my heart sink because this guy... He's out for the rest of the season. June Jones said after practice on Monday that he is gone for the year. He's been six gamed. And this was like he finally gets his chance to be the guy for a team, and his season ends like this. He for the most part, has been fantastic. He's missed five or six field goals in the year, but that's going to happen. But he's been awesome. He's been reliable. It was no longer a, oh my god, are they going to make a field goal? Oh my god, are they going to make a field goal? It was just, oh, Castillo's going out there. This is going through. And to see him lost for the year, it's a damn shame.
It is a damn shame. He was having such a strong season. I was confident in this kicking, in his kicking, field goals, punts, whatever. And to see him go down and out for the rest of the season is a real kick to this team. But hopefully they can bring in the right guys to not fill his shoes, but do a commendable job.
And they did bring in a couple of guys. We'd normally talk about this in the news, but since we're talking about Castillo here, we might as well bring it up now. They signed former Michigan kicker and punter Kenny Allen, and they also have brought in Brett Lawther, who played for the team back in, I want to say, 2013. I believe he was the kicker in the Touchdown Atlantic game this team played out there that you, I'm pretty sure, were at against the Montreal Alouettes. So he's been around for a little while. They brought him back in. It looks like we're in for a bit of a good old-fashioned kickoff, if you will. I'm assuming since Allen signed and Lawther was just brought in that this is more Allen's job to lose, but that's what we're looking at kicking-wise going forward.
Yeah, and I don't know what to expect. You know, we haven't seen much of – well, and we haven't seen anything of the American kid they brought in, but – I don't know. They must be high on them in some way, or they wouldn't have brought them in. And I just hope that they can be reliable, they can be dependable, and they can make those kicks when we need them.
Yeah, hard to disagree with that. Speaking of reliable and dependable, we have to give a tip of the cap to Felix Faubert-Lussier, who filled in for Sergio Castillo. And look, his performance wasn't earth-shattering by any stretch of the imagination, but I thought he did an admirable job coming in. I thought his punts, while low on hang time, had some good distance. I feel like he did a really good job when thrust into the position, and I think we need to recognize that, because it's not often you see a kicker go down to injury, but when you do, there's no backup kickers on rosters in the CFL, so someone, usually a Canadian guy who's done some kicking in the past, as Faubert Lucier did with, I believe it was Laval, where he went to school, so he did a little, he was like the backup kicker there as well and did some kicking, so to see him come in, I thought he did a really good job. What do you think?
I thought he did a good job as well. You know, the height on the kicks wasn't there. There wasn't that hang time, but I didn't expect to see that from not a kicker, not normally a kicker. You know what I mean? So I was very impressed with his punting, and I thought he was pushed. You know, he was thrown into the fire, and he dealt with it pretty well.
One last thing, special teams wise, that we need to get into, and this was a big one: Willie Quinn finally made his debut for the team. He was signed a few weeks back. Everyone's talking about this small speedster from Southern University. This guy, he's really fast. Got his chance to finally get the field in this one. What do you think of his debut, Mike?
I thought it was okay. You know, the numbers don't really jump out at you, but the guy is small. He can make people miss. So I would not be surprised if he broke one in the next couple games. Maybe not to the house, but a big return, I would not be surprised.
Oh, I think he's going to crib one eventually. He's taken one to the house in a game this year. He's got that breakaway speed is I think, a little bit of not enough. Because you saw the opening kickoff especially. He took it and it's like he was gliding. It wasn't that he was running. It's like it was very impressive. The rest of the game, he wasn't as explosive, but I would not be surprised to see this kid take one to the house sooner rather than later.
And if anyone misses a field goal against us, it's pretty much a guarantee, because this guy can fly.
Yeah, I think so as well. Okay, last bit of thing here. We got to talk about the Glorious Player of the Week. Mike, you have the honors this week. Who are you giving them to?
There is some options here that you could have went with. Defensive players, you could have went with receivers, but I got to go with Jeremiah Mazzoli. This guy stepped up big time in this game. You know, the completion percentage was 81.8. And if you've been watching Ticats football for the past couple weeks or for the past couple years when Mazzoli got in there, we all know that his completion percentage usually is not even close to that. So this guy was unbelievable. Game 338 yards passing, 2 touchdowns. He ran for almost 50 yards. This guy is a serious dual threat, and he's showing it, and he is my player of the game this week.
Can't disagree with you at all on that one, Mike, so we might as well move on to talking about some Ticats news. And the first thing we're going to talk about this week is, surprise surprise, the CFL has apologized to the Hamilton Tiger Cats for blowing another call. It seems like it wouldn't be a CFL season recently without the Ticats being apologized to by the league for a blown call in a game they lost. This one was the pass interference review on SJ Green that everyone and their grandmother, including Glenn Suter, said was ridiculous. The league has privately, not publicly, gone to the team and said, yes, there was a mistake made there. This is nothing new for us here. We remember in 2015, Brandon Stewart had an interception return for a touchdown against the Ottawa Redblacks in a late season game called back because of a pair of penalties the league later admitted were garbage. Then we have the Mike Filer moving the ball incident from the game in Saskatchewan. That was the thing that caused Ken Austin to flip out on the sidelines, accidentally hit a ref. That caused him to get the pseudo suspension he had. The league later came out and said that was a mistake. The Greg Ellingson catch and fumble that was in a game last year as well here in Hamilton with the Red Blacks that was challenged. I don't know if it was challenged. I think it was called a fumble on the field, and then turnovers automatically reviewed, and they reversed it to an incomplete pass. And the league came out and said that that was a mistake. And then the big one, the East semifinal last year, Brandon Reverberg gets a holding call that the league said was garbage, and Odell Willis laid a lick on Zach Caleros that did not get a roughing the passer penalty that the league later said should have, which was reviewed. The Ticats tried to review that play, and they were told no roughing the passer. They said big mistake. So, you know, after all these screw-ups, I always think that this is the one that will lead to sweeping change, and it never does. So I doubt that this one will as well.
Sweeping change in what way, though? Like, how is this supposed to get fixed?
Okay, so I'm glad you bring that up, because as much as I say that changes won't happen, I think there are some things that we have to – here's what I would do. If we had a question that we were going to get to last week about this, and I was going to go into a little bit of a mini rant here. Now, maybe this is not going to fix anything – or fix everything, I mean. I'm hoping it'll fix some things. But for this call in particular, the one on SJ Green, I think the first thing we need to realize from all of this the last few years is we can't have pass interference challenged anymore. It's clear as day that they the command center knows about as much about what is and isn't pass interference as the refs do. And the little bump on Green, it caused nothing and changed essentially not the outcome of the game, but changed the course of that game. So I think we've had these rules in for a few years now. They're being challenged, and you don't know. You just don't know what is and isn't pass interference. Adding the challenges is an absolutely nothing. I think the one challenge thing that we've had has worked to a degree, but I still think that the one change you make to that is you say the team has one challenge, but if they get it correctly, they get to keep their challenge. And if they keep getting them correctly, and the thing was they wanted to cut down on challenges, but at the same time, as much as cutting down on challenges has worked, it's made this – it's like the referees are now allowed to make three bad calls in a game. Two of them can be challenged. One of them can't. You know what I mean? So I don't know how we're going to get the refs to be better. But at least if this gives the opportunity to find a middle ground, if you will. And as much as I hate to say this, I rarely ever advocate for people being fired. But I think we've seen over the course of the last few years that the people in the command center are just not good enough at their job. And I think you need to completely overhaul the crew that's in there. I think it's time for an entirely new staff. I don't know who you can get in there, but clearly the people who are in there now don't know what they're doing. And again, we're talking about just the Ticats calls here. This is five or six calls in the last two-ish years that the league has admitted were blown calls. How many have happened to other teams across the league that because we're in Hamilton, we focus on the Ticats ones that we don't know about? How many teams have been apologizing? It just can't continue to happen. And I understand that there's mistakes are going to happen when human error exists. And that's why I don't throw this on the refs. I throw it more on the command center. They have the technology to look at this, and they're still getting it wrong. That tells me that the people who are looking at it just aren't good enough at their jobs, and I think they got to go.
Okay, so with the challenge thing, do they get one more challenge if they get it right? Or do they keep getting challenges? Is that
– I honestly – at this point,
if we're going back to what we hated before, right?
I mean,
if we give them challenges back, then we're gonna get it's gonna be slow. People are gonna bitch. Everyone there's gonna be bitching, and I'm not saying that the bitching isn't deserved, but what are we gonna do? I mean, if we give them more challenges, then it's gonna be a problem that way. If we take them away, then
it's
the refs are gonna mess up. Yeah, it's tough, right?
It is. It's really tough. The only thing that I can say with – again, I guess you are in a sense adding challenges, and I don't want that. But what I also don't want is these controversial calls happening with this much frequency. I get that bad calls are going to happen, and I can accept that. I really can. And coaches are going to make frivolous challenges and be wrong, and I can accept that. And I don't want games being bogged down by challenge after challenge after challenge. Maybe we just get rid of the challenge system altogether – and just say every sort of, not controversial call, but every sort of major call, things like whether a player was down by contact, whether a ball was turned over, whether a ball was scored or not. Like any play in the end zone is automatically reviewed. You know what I mean? Something like that, but take it out of the hands of the coaches so it's not a challenge process. It's something where they have someone who's like, hold on, he may have caught that. Let's look at it. Let's get it right. And then it's not about challenges. It's more about legitimately getting the play right. And not about sort of trying to find something in order – because this SJ Green challenge, for instance, was Mark Trestman trying to find a pass interference call in order to negate a game-altering play with Courtney Stevens' interception. That's all this was. It was a legitimate fishing expedition that he happened to get a break on, and they agreed that, yes, there was pass interference, even though now they're saying it wasn't pass interference. So maybe we just take it out of the hands of the coaches altogether, make it so it's not a tactical tool, and just make it about actually getting the call right.
Right, but if we still have the same bozos in the command center, then there's going to be a lot of delays, right?
Well, that's just it. That's why I think my third point of completely overhauling the command center crew, I think that's the biggest one, because year after year we see these guys making mistakes and there's no repercussions. And I hate the idea of saying we should fire this guy or fire that guy. But if you're not doing the job right, why do you have the job? And again, I admit that none of these are foolproof solutions and none of these are guaranteed to make it better. But in action, the status quo is not working. Something has to be done. And this is for people who make way more money than I do, who are way more involved in this game than I am. But something has to be done to fix these problems. It just does.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, they're losing fans to this. People aren't watching anymore because they're sick of the reffing. I know one Ticats fan who doesn't follow the team anymore. At least I'm not aware that he does. I'm pretty sure he doesn't. I know an Eskimos fan who only watches the Eskimos games now, who used to watch every single game because he's just sick of all the blown calls and all the bullshit that goes on with the reffing in the command center. With the refs, it's never going to be fixed. It's just not. I don't see how it can be unless there's a huge boom in football in Canada and there's a huge amount of refs that want to get into the game. But I don't see that happening. So I think that we're going to have to deal with bad reffing pretty much for the rest of our lives. If we're going to keep watching CFL football, we're going to have to deal with it, basically.
I'm fine with refereeing being not great because refereeing across the board in sports is every fan of every sports league complains about the officials. To me, it's more to do with replay. Where replay, it's either get it right or get rid of it, to be honest with you, because clearly the way that it's done now is not working. It's not getting the calls right. It's not fixing the quote-unquote egregious errors. That's the quote that was used at the beginning of the season. Replay is used to fix egregious errors. There was nothing egregious about Damon Washington's tiny bump on SJ Green that caused that. It didn't cause Ricky Ray to overthrow the ball. It didn't cause SJ Green not to be able to catch it. That was incidental and completely irrelevant to what happened on that play. But if you can't get those things right, if you can't get the
Was it past 5 yards though, Josh? Was it past 5 yards? Did he touch him past 5 yards?
That's the problem. Is now we're making football into this game where it's like if he's, you know, a gnat's pube ahead of 5 yards, it's a penalty, and that's not football. Like I can deal. Like, the refs on the field didn't think it was pass interference, and the league itself admitted it wasn't. So the refs got it right. Like that's the thing.
Who are these people in the command center? Like who are these people?
Well, this was apparently Glenn Jake Johnson. Ireland.
Jake Ireland.
Well, so, I'm just saying, I think it's time for some fresh blood. Or you just completely get rid of the replay system altogether. But then you're going to open up a whole other can of worms if you do that. I don't know what the answer is. I don't think any of us know what the answer is. I just know that after watching this go on for this long, I just don't think what we have now is right. And I would rather see the league do something to make a change and have it not work than to stick with the status quo into another year knowing it doesn't work. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair enough. And I'm pretty positive that with our commissioner, Randy Ambrosi, you know, he's a man of action. I'm sure he will be meeting with everyone in the offseason trying to fix this as much as possible.
Okay, enough heated debate over replay and blown calls. Let's talk about some moves the Ticats actually made. They made a huge coaching move. They brought in Dan Morrison as the team's assistant, or offensive assistant, and quarterbacks coach. And this guy has a past with June Jones. He coached with him both at Southern Methodist from 2008-2014 and at Hawaii from 99 to 2007. So this is a guy that's familiar with what Jones likes to do. He's come in as an offensive assistant. He's come in as a QB coach. So he's definitely helping to mold the offense. And to me, this isn't necessarily the move itself about what Morrison brings to the team this year, but I think it's about what it represents. And this is the theory that I'm going to throw out there, and I kind of threw it out there on Twitter and a little bit during the game, but I think that this tells me, in just trying to piece everything together, that June Jones will be the head coach of the Hamilton Tiger-Cats next year, and that Stefan Potasek will be coaching elsewhere, likely in Canadian university football, in 2018. I look at this move, not again, like I said, not for this year, but as a way for Jones to start building a staff for next year. You got Jones and his head coach. I think Philip Lawley has proven that he should be this team's defensive coordinator. And now you have Morrison here, who's an offensive assistant that I think would very well be able to just slide into the role of offensive coordinator and stick with his duties as quarterback coach. And now you get these guys, Morrison, to come up here for a couple of weeks, month or so, get himself used to the CFL, get himself used to the intricacies. And I think this tells me that this is the coaching staff that we're going to have in 2018. And this is the big one. For as much as fans wanted a ton of changes this offseason, I think this tells me that Austin, Tillman, Scott Mitchell, they're all staying put. Unless they choose to leave on their own, I don't think you're going to see a major shakeup in the front office or on the coaching staff of this team.
No, I have to agree with you on that one. You know, June Jones is bringing in his guys. You know, we tried to bring in someone earlier when we'll talk about that, but he brings in this new assistant coach who he has history with. It tells me the same thing that it tells you. June Jones is going to be the head coach next year. He's going to be the guy leading this Hamilton Tiger Cats team. And personally, I'm happy with that decision because since he has taken over this team, we've seen immense improvement. And it's not just all June Jones, but he has a big part in it. And so does Philip Lawley. The defense has been incredible since he's taken over. So if this is the coaching staff that's heading into next season, I'm pretty happy with that.
Yeah, like I said, I said on Twitter that I thought this is the move. When I said on Twitter, some people can go back and look, I said I thought June Jones was going to be the coach. And then after what I saw in the Winnipeg game, I believe he's earned the right to be the head coach. This team's turned it around. They're 4-2 with Jones at the helm. If Jones started the year as coach, they were 4-2. Like I've said this numerous times over the last couple of weeks. They're 4-2 at the start of the season. We're not having any conversations about will they make the playoffs or won't they. You're talking about a team that's, okay, they won more than they've lost. That's pretty darn good to start a season. So I don't think there's any way, unless these guys do not want to be with this team, I think Austin stays as VP. I think Mitchell stays as president. I think Tillman stays. But most importantly, I think we see the makings of the Ticats coaching unit. And I will add Dennis McKnight. Dennis McKnight? Yeah. I think that's who it is.
Dennis McPhee.
McPhee. Thank you very much. I always get the two mixed up. I think he's...
How dare you?
Yeah, no, to be honest with you, it's a man's name, and that's what he has in this world. And to get that wrong, I apologize. But I think he'll stay as special teams coordinator. Like, I think we're seeing the team, minus maybe, you know, they're going to add a couple players, they're going to lose a couple players. I think we're seeing the team and the staff and the front office that we're going to see in 2018 with all these moves.
Yep, and once again, I'm happy with that. I think that they have a solid core of players, young and veteran players, and the coaching staff, from what I've seen this year, is pretty top-notch. So if we go into next season with all these guys, all the coaching staff, and you know, there's going to be changeover in players. There always is, but if we bring back the core, I think we could be a pretty good football team. I think we're a pretty good football team right now. It's just late in the season, but I think we could put together a winning record next year if all these pieces come back.
Say the Ticats don't make the playoffs, which is more likely than not at this point. I think you'll see this team come the start of next season. I think people will look at this team and go, "They're the team that will make the leap from out of the playoffs to in the playoffs," based on what we're seeing at the tail end of this season. Last bit of Ticats news. They made some moves this week. They brought in 5 players, practice rosters around the league, expand around this time, and the Ticats added a quintet to theirs. We're not going to get too in-depth in this because unless you're very familiar with any of these players, Mike, I think these are all just hopefuls. Maybe they'll be a diamond in the rough, but they brought in quarterback Dane Evans, wide receiver Jamal Robinson, offensive lineman John Kling, linebacker Lucas Waka, I want to say, but I haven't been told how to pronounce his name, and defensive back Dante Blackman. Again, we're not going to go into each individual here and talk about their resumes or anything like that, but 5 guys brought in at the end of the season, get themselves used to CFL. Maybe these are names of guys that we will see in training camp next year. Who knows? But maybe we find a guy out of this that can really help the team. You never know.
Yeah, you just never know. We don't know much about these guys, but we had to mention them since it is, you know, a Ticats podcast. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see. Get them comfortable with this game for the last, you know, 4 or 5 games of the season, and then bring them back into camp, and they'll know, you know, what's going on in this league, what the rules are, and all that good stuff.
And the team also released national linebacker Curtis Newton, who I believe went and signed with the Argos almost immediately after he was released. Mostly a special teams player for the Ticats. And I guess with the return of Ted Laurent, the team needed to find room for another Canadian player. And Newton drew short straw. So good luck to him with the Argos. But it's not like he didn't do a ton here. Like I said, special teams guy. And look, if you're trading Ted Laurent in for a Canadian player, I think the Ticats got the good end of this one.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, what a surprise. The Ticats release a player, and he immediately signs with the Argos.
Yeah, shocking. Shocking indeed. Unless we're missing something, there's no CFL news of any real importance to talk about this week. So we're going to jump right into the game preview. And this is a biggie, Mike. So we sat here last week and we gave no chance to the Ticats against the Bombers, and they shocked us. So now we obviously have to go crazy and say they'll beat Calgary, right?
Well, I don't know if you go that crazy. I mean, I hope so, but this is going to be a challenge. I mean, this is a team we haven't beat, correct me if I'm wrong, since 2011, right? So
correct.
It's but we snapped the streak in BC, so anything is possible.
So here's the thing. They haven't won against Calgary, like you said, since 2011. That was a touchdown Atlantic game. What's the one thing about that game that we haven't had at any other Calgary-Hamilton game since then? Do you know what it is?
Neutral site?
Both. Well, oh, damn it. Yes, I guess. Although they did play in Guelph, although that was not so much neutral site. But what I was trying to get at was that game had you and I both in attendance. So maybe you need to find your butt down here for Friday night. I know, I'm kidding. But next time these guys play... Next time these guys play in Hamilton, maybe you need to get yourself down to Hamilton for a game. We can both be in attendance, and the Ticats will win.
Yeah, that's a hell of an idea right there, and I would love to do that. Or maybe we'll see in the future, Josh. Or maybe, this year they had the Edmonton-Calgary games back-to-back. Maybe we can figure something out and get your butt out here.
Oh, and they break the streak in McMahon? Okay, maybe we can find that out too. Anyway, this Ticats team, I think, has a ton of confidence. And it's completely, I don't think, out of the realm of possibilities that this team could pull off the upset. This is not the same team that the Stampeders beat in that 60-1 crap fest that we saw back that you talked about just 30 seconds earlier. Look, I think Calgary will win this game because I think you're foolish to pick against Calgary. But I am not... I'm not saying the Ticats can't win this game. I don't think they will, but we didn't think they'd beat Winnipeg. And they went into Winnipeg and they slaughtered them. I know Calgary's not Winnipeg, but if the Ticats win this game, I'll be surprised, but I won't be shocked because this is a much different football team than when these two teams met earlier in the year.
Absolutely. You know what? I think they have a shot. I really do. I think they're going to be extremely fired up for this game. You know, the loss earlier on in the season, plus, like, even if that didn't happen, they're on a roll right now. They want to show, they want to prove to the league that we're the real deal. And what better way than to come out and beat Calgary? So do I think they're going to win? Not necessarily. Do I think they have a chance? Yes, I do.
Yeah, my only worry is that it's the Stamps coming off a bye, and Calgary hasn't lost in the regular season coming off a bye since, like, 2005 or something ridiculous like that. So give them an extra week to prepare, and you're in a lot of trouble. But, hey, we've seen crazier things happen. Is there anything specifically you'd like to talk about the offensive side of the ball that you think could lead the Ticats to maybe pulling off this stunning upset?
They need to score points early.
Oh, okay. Like, I thought you were just going to say they need to score points.
that too. But you just see this Calgary team, you know, sometimes they blow the doors off a team like earlier in the season with us, and they put a whooping on Montreal recently. But a lot of the time they hang around with teams, and then fourth quarter they score a couple touchdowns and, you know, put it out of range. This team needs to come out and get ahead early. Make them fight back. Make them be uncomfortable for once. You know, like, if this team jumps out to an early lead, we got a serious shot, because I haven't seen a game this year where Calgary has to really fight back to get a victory. Now, I'm sure there might be one or two that I'm forgetting, but I don't recall it. So jump out early, get a lead, score points.
It's funny because defensively I kind of have the same thing. To me, it's not about stopping the Stamps from doing what they do, because they're going to do that, but to me, it's the Ticats have to keep doing what they've been doing. That includes pressuring the quarterback, not giving up big plays, creating turnovers, all that sorts of stuff. And if they stay in this game, if the defense can keep it close and it comes down to the end there, anything can happen. So in conjunction with you, you know, getting that big lead, scoring early, jumping out early. I think the defense needs to just do what they do to keep this game as close as possible. Even if Calgary gets a lead, allow the offense to find a rhythm and maybe get themselves back into this if they can't. But I just think that both units just have to play their game. Ticats run the ball, stop the run. Like it's going to be fun. They've stopped Andrew Harris and James Wilder in back-to-back weeks, and now they get Jerome Messam, who's a guy who has traditionally eaten up the Ticats defense. I'm curious to see what they could do to stop him, because as good as Calgary is offensively, they're that good because they have that what we talked about with the Ticats, that multi-dimensional offense. You take away Messam, the Ticats jump out to a big lead, and the Stamps have to throw, then you can get some pressure. Like, I think there are some keys to this game. There are some things the Ticats can do to keep this close, to get this win. And I think we've outlined them basically in generalities, because it's not about, to me, even offensively, it's not about they have to pick on this guy or pick on that guy. It's do what they do best, and this game could end up in our favor.
It could. It could. Do we know if Messam's going to be back this week?
I think so. I figured that he was held out last week because he got hurt, but I also think they had the bye week, so you hold them out there.
Right.
That's my thinking. Nothing's for certain. By the time this hits the airwaves and people listen to it, perhaps we'll know Messam is out. By the time the game starts, maybe Messam doesn't play. But I'm assuming he does, because I think the week off allows for him to kind of come back. So we'll have to wait and see. But I think we're in for, or at least I hope we're in for, a little bit more of an interesting game on Friday night between the Cats and the Stamps than we've seen a lot recently at Tim Hortons Field. So I don't know. I don't feel super confident, but I'm also not dreading this as much as I was, especially after the Winnipeg game. I was like, going into that game, I was like, okay, they're going to lose these two, and then it's going to be, okay, hopefully Ottawa loses their two, and then they can come out of those last 3 weeks. But now they got that win at Winnipeg, I feel a lot more confident about this one. And maybe we'll come back next week, and it'll be Calgary won 54-14, and we're talking about the death of the Ticats again. But I don't know. Just the way this team's played the last 6 weeks, they got a shot in this one, and I would not have said that thinking about how they played against them when they lost by 59 earlier in the summer.
Yep. Like I said, I think this team is going to be hugely fired up for this game, and they should be. They're going to bring everything they have. They're going to throw the kitchen sink at Calgary, because they know they have to beat the best team in the league. And if they do beat the best team in the league, I will believe in this playoff run.
Okay, let's make some picks now, Mike. First game up, Stamps at Ticats, Friday night. Start of a doubleheader. Who do you got in this one?
I haven't done my picks for like 5 weeks in the actual pick'em, just because, I don't know. I didn't do them 1 week, and then I kind of forgot again.
That's what happened to me. It happened to me in like week five. It's like, oh, I forgot to put one in. Oh, I'm not going to bother. And then I'll just get to them next week. And then you put it off, and then you realize it's been 10 weeks before you've done them.
Right. So I'm going to go with the Ticats. I'm going to pull a 180 on you, and I'm going to go with the Ticats because I can.
Okay.
And you can't tell me not to.
I would never tell you not to. I'm going to take the Stamps because, look, as much as I want the Ticats to win, until Calgary gets beat by this team, I have a hard time picking them. But that's okay. I'm still going to cheer my hardest. I'd rather lose and pick them than have the Ticats lose in real life. So it doesn't really matter. Second game of the doubleheader. This is a big one for us here in Hamilton. Ottawa at Saskatchewan. So if Hamilton does lose to Calgary, as many expect, Ottawa also has to lose to Saskatchewan for Hamilton's playoff hopes to remain alive. If Ottawa beats the Riders, the Ticats are eliminated from the playoffs, and we have essentially the two teams, at least from the East, that we know will be in it. It'll be the Red Blacks and the Argos. So as hard as this is for me to say, on Friday night after the Ticats game, I'm going to come home. We got to cheer for the Riders, Mike. But regardless of who we have to cheer for, who are you picking?
I'm going to go with the Riders. You know, Ottawa pulled off that victory last week against BC. I didn't see the second half, really. I'm assuming they played well to come back like that. But Saskatchewan's been playing pretty well, too. I mean, Brandon Bridge came in and played a hell of a game. I don't know who's going to be their starting quarterback, but I'll go with the Riders.
I'm going to take the Riders as well, just because they're at home. I think these teams are pretty even, but I think Saskatchewan's a little bit better. And with the home crowd, I think Ottawa will have been on the road. They went to the BC game. They're staying out in Saskatchewan for the week. That can either galvanize a team and bring them together, or it can be, man, they've been away from home for too long. So I'll take the Riders in this one, because I think they're a little bit better. And again, Ottawa, even if they lose this one, they're still holding for like they still hold serve essentially. They're going to be if they win out, they win this one and they win against Hamilton in 2 weeks, they're in the playoffs. So they still hold their own fates in their hand. But I like the Riders this one as well. Saturday we have a doubleheader as well, Mike. The very struggling BC Lions head to Winnipeg to take on what I think will be a hungry Bombers team. Who do you like in this one?
Yeah, I think they're both going to be hungry teams. BC blew that lead. They're really not meeting expectations this year. But I think I'm going to go with the Bombers. They're going to want to avenge that loss to the terrible, terrible Ticats. And, they're still in the thick of things in that playoff race. Maybe they won't be able to catch Calgary, but they want that home playoff game. So I'll go with the Bombers.
I just think the Bombers are the better team. BC just seems like a shell of its former self, and I think the sooner they're put out of their misery, the better for them. They can focus on making changes for next season. I like the Bombers in this one too. Lastly, Saturday night, the Toronto Argonauts head to Edmonton, your neck of the woods, take on the Edmonton Eskimos. Mike, who do you like in this one?
It's a tough game to pick. Toronto still is a team that I can't figure out for the life of me. And Edmonton as well. So, I'm just going to go with Edmonton because they're at home and they finally got that win today, broke the streak. So Eskimos beat the Argos.
Yeah, the S are still fighting to get third in the West, and third in the West or finishing fourth in the West and heading over East. And I don't think either are really where you want to be. You're not getting a home game, you're going on the road anyway. But I got to like the Eskimos this one too. I think the Argos are a good team, but I can't figure out who they are either. They look really good against Hamilton, at least at the end there, and then they host the Riders and choke that one away. I don't know what the Argos are. The Eskimos, yeah, they had that 6-game losing streak. Like you said, they broke it against the Owls on Thanksgiving. Like, home team between two equal teams, that's the one I'm going to go with, so I'm taking the Eskimos as well. All right, Mike, it's now time for some questions. We didn't get to them last week, so we held them over to this week. Our first one, though, is a bit of a funny one. It's not really all that serious. Gregory just posted, last week I said we were not doing questions because the show was going long, so we cut it short. And he simply asks, am I the only listener that prefers the longer podcasts? And to answer that question, it is yes. To catch everyone up, when was it? Maybe about midway through our first year, we took some heat from some people for having 80, 90-minute podcasts, and people complained that they were too long and all that other sorts of stuff. And I like to keep these to about an hour simply because I think that's a good time. I don't mind talking. I could talk for 3 hours about the CFL and the Ticats and all that sorts of stuff, but you got to do what the listeners want. And yeah, sometimes you go a little long, but that one last week, had we gotten to the questions, probably would have been pushing over an hour and 45 minutes. So yeah, it's cool that you like the longer podcast, but yes, Greg, you are pretty much the only one that does.
We're answering a question about we're extending the podcast by answering a question. See what I'm trying to get at here?
We are answering a
Anyways, yeah.
question to extend the podcast. We're answering a question about doing an extended podcast. Yes, I understand the irony there.
Yes, moving on.
Yes, moving on indeed. Andrew gave us a good one on Twitter. He asks us, if you're Eric Tillman, who do you ship in or out before season's end? And I thought that with the trade deadline coming up on Wednesday, I thought this would be a great question to have. So, Mike, what do you think?
I think I have one name, and that's Zach Kolaros, and not because I don't think he's a tremendous player and can still be a starter in this league anywhere, any team he plays for, but just because of the circumstances around this team. He's a backup quarterback right now who's going to be the highest paid player in the league next year. So something has to happen with him, whether he's named the starter for next year or he's traded away. I think the latter happens. It's sad to see him go because, well, he's not gone yet, but if he does go, it's sad to see him go because I'm sure you thought this as well a couple years ago that this guy's going to be our quarterback, our team leader for the next 10, 12, 13 years, and it doesn't appear to be that way.
It doesn't. I understand where you're coming from there. My answer is no one. I don't think this team needs to bring anyone in, and I don't think they really need to trade anyone. I think you keep Kolaros. Look, they're paying Kolaros a salary anyway. What, 4 games left? You've paid the majority of it out to begin with. So keep him around. What if Mazzoli gets hurt? You got a veteran backup there that, like I said, I think can produce in this offense. So I think you keep him around, and I don't really look around the league. Like, you see Montreal, and they've been eliminated from the playoffs. Maybe you get a veteran there, but I don't know if the Ticats are a veteran player away from making a run at the Grey Cup, and that's the only way you really make one of these deals at the deadline. You're either selling off guys because you're out of it, or you're bringing guys in because you want to make a push, and I don't think the Ticats are really in either of those. I think they're going to roll with the guys they got, and I don't think we're going to see anyone brought in or anyone traded out. That's how I read the tea leaves. And if I was him, I don't think I'd do any deals because I don't really see anyone out there that would necessarily make this team that much better.
Yeah, and it's not like you have to quickly get rid of Claros because he is under contract for next year. So you could, you know, if you're going to trade him, you can do it in the offseason. So I don't see any reason why they'd make a quick trade just to make one before the trade deadline. And the trade deadline really isn't that big a deal in the CFL. I mean, you don't see – it's not the NHL trade deadline. You don't see these big moves usually right before it happens.
No, no, not at all. Next question, second to last one we got here. This one I saw on Twitter. It was addressed to sort of everyone in the Canadian Football Podcast Network, so I decided to take it because I think we could talk about some fun stuff here. The question came from a Twitter user named Adam, and not our Adam that always answers questions. Another one. Maybe we have a lot of listeners named Adam. I wonder if we could do like a survey and find out the names of people who listen to the show, because there's like three or four different Adams that we've had questions from on this show. So I think that's pretty neat. But anyway, his question was, who is your most disappointing acquisition from last offseason? And this is all teams around the league. It's not just Ticats related. I have a few that I'd like to talk about, Mike, but I'd like you to go first. Who do you have as disappointing offseason acquisitions from the last offseason?
I got a couple guys. First off, I'll stick with the Ticats. Abdul Kane. Now, he had a great game last game, and it's not because of his performance on the field. It's just because this guy was our biggest offseason signing. He was supposed to help the secondary immensely, and he's just been hurt the whole season. So in that sense, it's been very disappointing. And another guy is Chris Williams. Now, he was out for a large part of the season. But he's come back, and he hasn't made the difference that I thought he would on that BC Lions team. I thought, you know, with Jennings throwing the ball, he'd be a huge deep threat, and I just haven't seen that. At this point, I'd take Brandon Banks as a receiver over Chris Williams, straight up. So he's been a huge disappointment for the BC Lions, considering he's probably making a very healthy salary as well.
Yeah, I can't disagree with those either, and I would take Brandon Banks over Chris Williams as a receiver. What is things you would never have said in June for 200, Alex?
Holy
smokes. Never would have seen that coming. I think those are two reasonable picks. It sucks when you put a guy up due to injury, but I got one of those guys on my list, Chad Owens. Chad Owens has been disappointing signing for the Riders because we're in, what, week 16 now? We're just finishing week 16. He hasn't seen the field yet. And that's a long time for a veteran guy who was a big offseason acquisition to not play. Kane at least has played a couple of games, and I agree, because of the injuries, it's been a bit of a disappointing season for him. But at least we've actually seen him play in, what, 2.5-ish games now? We haven't seen Chad Owens play at all for the Riders. So that, to me, is even a bigger disappointment than Kane. And my other two are a pair of signings for Montreal, Darian Durant and Ernest Jackson. Durant has been benched.
Yep.
Now, he's injured, quote-unquote, but he's essentially been benched for Drew Willey, of all people. And Ernest Jackson, I don't know if they're just using him incorrectly, but his numbers are way, way down. This was the guy that was the East's most outstanding player last year, and now he's a complete afterthought in the Al's offense. I would not be surprised if both of those guys, maybe even all three of these guys, were playing elsewhere in 2018. I think you and I talked about this before. We didn't want to have the same people, but I think all five of the guys we listed are pretty good candidates for disappointing offseason acquisitions.
I have to highly agree with you on the Darian Durant and Ernest Jackson. Durant has been utter garbage since he's been in Montreal. Maybe he had a couple good games earlier on in the season, but he's really let down this team with throwing the balls in the dirt on a constant basis. And Ernest Jackson, a guy who supposedly didn't drop a ball last year, has dropped several balls that I've seen this year. So both of those guys are very good picks on your part because they've been immensely disappointing for the Montreal Alouettes.
And they've mostly played, too. And it's funny, I got into a little bit of a Twitter spat over the weekend with someone who was telling me that the Ticats should trade for Darian Durant because because he won a Grey Cup in 2013. And it's like, it's not 2013 anymore. And I get it. We talked and it ended up being like, well, Durant's kind of like Mazzoli and he'd be a good veteran backup, but
no, Mazzoli's better. Durant's play offends me, man. It offends me as a football fan watching that terrible, terrible. I don't know what's wrong with him, but he can't make a 10-yard pass to save his life.
Well, and that was it too. Like one of the arguments was, well, Kevin Glenn didn't play good in that offense last year, but Kevin Glenn could complete passes. Yeah, the offense wasn't great, but Glenn was completing passes. Darian Durant, like you said, he's throwing him in the dirt. He couldn't throw. Having a problem throwing is not scheme. That's player performance issues.
Yeah, the players were open. The passes were short and low.
Yeah, I'm sure Darian Durant will find a team, but to me, he's a backup quarterback now, and he either has to accept that role and go to a team with a young quarterback, like say somewhere like BC. If say Travis Lule's career is over, Darian Durant goes in there as a backup to Jonathan Jennings, or maybe he does come to Hamilton and as a backup quarterback, but he's not a guy you're going to bring in to try to turn your team around, and he's not a guy that I would trade for Zach Caleros, even with like a package of extra players coming over with him or draft picks or whatever, because I just – Zach Caleros, you can get a pretty good haul for him, I think, even with him as a backup, because teams around the league are going to look at him and say, oh, we get him in here, we'll be able to get him back to that MOP level. Darian Durant's at the tail end of his career. Zach Caleros still has a lot of years left in him. I'm not making that trade for anyone.
No, absolutely not. I do not want to see Darian Durant in black and yellow next season, and I don't see that happening at all.
Okay, last question comes from our main man, Broccoli. And he says, at the beginning of the season, 7 3 Down Nation columnists made predictions on the order of finish. And 5, including myself, me, Josh, not Broccoli, picked the Ticats to finish first in the East. And his question is basically, are we finally seeing the team that all of us at 3 Down Nation saw as first place finishers? Or is this a different animal entirely? Now, it's a bit of a complicated question, but if you don't mind, I'd like to go first. And my answer to this is a completely different team than the one that we expected to be good at the beginning of the season. Maybe, and you probably even agree with me, I would suspect. But we, and myself included, made those picks with the Ticats finishing first, with Ken Austin as head coach, Jeff Reinbold as defensive coordinator, Terrence Tolliver being healthy, Zach Caleros as the starting quarterback. Like, you get my point. Like, this team has gone through massive changes over the course of this season that we never could have seen coming. So when those picks came back in June, this was an entirely different team than one we see now. So I don't think this is the team that we thought would finish first. I think this is a completely different team altogether.
The production is what we expected, but the people doing the producing are not. You went through the list. I mean, Banks being one of our top receivers,
Who would have seen that coming in the offseason? Who would have, at the beginning of the season, would you have, if I had told you Brandon Banks would be approaching 500 yards after being a starting receiver? Like if I told you Brandon Banks would have 500 yards receiving at the beginning of the season, period, you probably would have called me crazy.
Yeah, because believe that he would have never, ever, ever got that opportunity if Ken Austin was the head coach. June Jones came in, saw the speed, saw the talent, said this guy can really make a difference in my offense, and he certainly has. So, yeah, this team is just totally different. I mean, Shamon Chambers is a receiver. The offensive line is a little bit different. Fulton's out. Matthews is in, a rookie who's been playing outstanding. You know, Tony Washington comes over. It's just completely different offensive, defense, even special teams now with Sergio going down. So the production is there that we thought would be there, but the people playing, the people coaching are pretty much all different at this point.
Yeah, and that's why I think this is a different animal entirely, because if we had stuck with what we had at the beginning of the season, I don't think this team produces like they are now. Now, the Terrence Tolliver injury, I think, is the big one. If he stays healthy, maybe this team doesn't go into that 0-8 rut, you know what I mean? Because he's a difference maker at receiver, but
maybe.
CJ Gable's not on this team anymore. John Chick's not on this team anymore, and they were there at the start of the season. Brandon Banks is not returning kicks. Like, that's a big thing, too. Like, maybe Brandon Banks wasn't the greatest kick returner and punt returner anymore, but he was still a guy that you're like, okay, but he could take one to the house. Like he could show us that spark. And now he's got a completely different role. Like we talked about, like, he's a receiver now. Like, there are so many changes this team has undergone from where we were in the preseason to where we are now with 4 weeks left in the season, that I think it's impossible to say that this is the team that we saw at the beginning of the year. Like you said, production, yes. That this 4-2 run they've been on, this is what we expected. But like you said, the guys doing it never would have seen coming.
Nope, not in a million years.
That's it, Mike. We are done. That's the show for this week. Remember, you can subscribe to our wonderful podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or you can listen to it and download it at 3downnation.com. You want to throw us a question, you're always welcome to. You can hit us up on Twitter at any time with questions. Mike, let them know where they can find you, please.
I forget.
Mike underscore Argos, right?
Yeah, no.
Argo Mike. Isn't it Argo Mike?
No. Mike underscore Ticats, everyone. Get at me.
And I am Josh Smith underscore 82. And, of course, you can always throw us a question in the comments section on 3Down Nation when the podcast goes up. Mike, that was episode 91 of Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
Now, Mike Graham, eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.